Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Where To Go. I'm James Atkinson, brand manager at DK Eyewitness.
And I'm Lucy Richards, senior editor at DK Eyewitness.
And welcome to Where To Go, where every fortnight we find out more about the world's favourite travel destinations with the people who know those places best. Yes. And this week, Lucy, we are heading to Florence.
It's so lovely to be going back to Italy. It's been too long.
Yes. So I think, you know, it hasn't been since our first episode when we talked to Tony, I think.
A long time ago.
I mean, I don't know, pandemic, time feels like it's either a long, long time ago or yesterday.
Or no time at all.
I can't really work out. I'll get my head around it. But I mean, heading back to Italy, the sort of sights, the sounds, the food, the drink.
Yes, architecture.
Architecture. And, you know, Florence is kind of a big combination of all of those things, really. I mean, I have to be honest, I've never been. It's one of those places kind of culturally that's on my list.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably one of those places that you think, oh, it's always there, so I'll make it at some point. I have been. I went for a day over 10 years ago. I was a student and I stayed in Bologna, and then I went to Florence for a day and Verona for a day. Mm-hmm. And my sister also did art history, so she loves Florence. I feel I know Florence quite well, all the art scene through her, but my sort of memory of it is it's just one of those wonderful cities just to walk around. Mm. Obviously you've got, I remember the queue for the Uffizi was ginormous. We're like, we're not doing that. We're not queuing for the Uffizi. And we were students, so we hadn't prepared ourselves in any way, but just it's got the Duomo and it's just got lots of, you know, gelato shops, and it's just one of those beautiful cities to cross all the bridges and stroll around, and yeah, obviously huge art scene. So I'm really excited that we've got someone to tell us more detail, because I don't remember loads about it.
That's the extent of what you remember.
It's just a very wonderful, lovely,
it would be a very short episode if it was
city.
You talking about Florence.
Exactly. And that's all from us, folks.
Yeah, all done. So who is the expert that we've got to talk about Florence today?
We've got Mary Gray, an American writer and journalist based there.
Yes. So Mississippi-born Mary is a writer, journalist and editorial consultant who's been based in Italy for 8 years.
And she very much enjoys sharing the best of her adoptive city and country and debunking the myth of the Dolce Vita.
So welcome, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you both for having me. Oh. So happy to be here.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you talking about Florence. So in this episode, we'll talk to Mary about how she ended up in Florence, and then we'll dig in a bit deeper into things to do when planning a trip, and then we'll finish off on our normal way, bringing it to the present day. So Mary, tell us, how did you end up living in Florence?
Well, I really don't have a super original way that I arrived here. Like very many Americans or really just English-speaking folks who end up in the city. I did a semester abroad here, a study exchange program, okay, similar to Erasmus, but obviously coming from the U.S. And but the interest really, or the seed for that, was planted in high school when I took an art history course with just a really incredible, really engaging teacher. And her favorite city was Florence, naturally, as an art historian. And so that really, I'd always kind of had one foot out of the door of my hometown, or always been ready to venture to other places. Yeah. But I kind of fantasized about living in like Paris or London growing up. And then, but then I sort of caught the Italy bug, I like to say, while taking this advanced placement. Or I don't need to say advanced placement, but this art history course in high school, which really, looking back on it, it was one of those sort of micro decisions that actually ends up to be something that really changes the course of your life.
Yeah.
So I'm forever grateful. Shout out to Julie Maddox, my teacher, who sort of planted that initial interest.
Julie Maddox. Hello, Julie.
Hello, Julie. Like, well done on planting that seed. I think it's safe to say it's kind of worked out too, right?
I would say it's gone well. It's gone well overall. Can't complain.
So when did you kind of decide to make that move? Like, I know you said you did the placement. Did you go back to the States and then come back, or did you just stay?
Oh, no, I wish it were that simple. So the very abbreviated version is, that'll probably still be long because it's me talking. But the abbreviated version is that I went back after doing that exchange program to finish my degree in the U.S. And then was sort of looking at what I wanted to do after graduation, you know, having the sense that I wanted to travel again or have a similar sort of experience. And I applied for a bunch of different fellowships and things that just weren't working out in a bunch of different countries. Mm. But deep down, I had this sense though that I really just wanted to go back to Italy, and or I really felt pulled back there. So I applied for some, again, big scholarships and programs and things that didn't really work out. And I ended up going just on my own, actually, to Rome for a year with the intention of – I started out as an au pair and studying Italian as sort of a means to stay in the country. Yeah. But also because I wanted to learn Italian and you know, study. And then I ended up teaching English and doing a bunch of sort of odd jobs and things while I was there. And I really only ever intended to stay 1 year. But I was getting to the end of that year abroad and felt like I was just starting to find my footing and starting to really get a grip of the language and everything. And I didn't want to give it up so prematurely. So I did go back to the States again for a little bit. And ironically, in the States, started an Italian master's program, which then in a very kind of zigzagging way brought me back to Florence. And eventually I picked up some part-time work with the Florentine English language news magazine here.
Yeah.
And that was sort of – and so that was part-time in the beginning while I was also studying. And then eventually that turned into full-time work, and I was in that role for about 5 years. So I would say that – and only recently went freelance, or recently. I mean, pre-COVID. But it feels recent because the past 2 years have kind of been a blur with the pandemic.
Sure, yeah.
But let's say that the moment that I really made, I think that I kind of was like, okay, this is going to be a place where I am for a while, was when the job at the Florentine became full-time.
Okay.
So that, but that was about, again, that was after about 2 years of kind of studying and juggling a bunch of different gigs and trying to figure it all out. So it wasn't like a thing that happened overnight.
So it's not like a spontaneous, even though you kind of had that dream originally, it wasn't just a, right, I'm here. This is my future. There was. It's kind of a really gradual thing, really.
It was really gradual. Well, I like to tell people that when I look back on it now, I can see that I was just kind of enjoying putting all these different puzzle pieces together and trying to figure out how how I could make it work. But but because when I originally came, I think a lot of people have this, and this is sort of, or a lot of people have this misconception, which is one reason that in my bio that you shared at the beginning, I say that I like to debunk the myth of the Dolce Vita. I think a lot of people have this idea that if they move to Italy or just even just moving abroad somewhere else in general, that they're going to kind of have the red carpet rolled out for them and I'm going to walk in and I'm going to get this like glamorous job right away. Yeah. And
or Emily in Paris style.
Exactly. Shows like that don't help to kind of, temper the reality of the situation. So I like to tell people when people ask if they should move to Italy or embark on an adventure like this, I like to say, I think you should never tone down your dreams, but certainly temper your expectations.
Good advice. Very good advice.
Yeah. So you talked about like kind of bunking the myth a little bit, but I mean, how much does Florence and kind of Tuscany as well, like kind of live up to that, that kind of beautiful stereotype in terms of like the scenery, the sort of surroundings? Does it live up to any of that romance?
I think absolutely on that level, it lives up to the romance. You can't really deny the beauty, at every turn in Florence and in Tuscany as a whole. And I'm a bit of a traitor for saying this, but I actually think that Rome is probably even more beautiful, but we can cut that out of the podcast if it doesn't serve for Florence as a destination.
Furious.
But I think, I don't know, Florence has a very specific kind of color palette and Tuscany, there's a certain kind of light that hits the Arno, and it's very, I've been here for almost too long now, but still whenever I cross the bridge or cross the bridge closest to my house or any of the bridges going across the Arno to get from my neighborhood, which is the Alto Arno, into downtown, more kind of central Florence, I do still get... get the urge to like take a photo or just like linger there on the bridge for a little bit. Not always, but at certain times of day, usually like early morning or around sunset.
Yeah.
I think that light is really interesting. Like, so when we do the eyewitness guides to Florence and Tuscany, I think I've seen two different editions come through, and the jackets are always capture that light.
That glow, it's got a real glow to it.
It's like glow with like where the shadows kind of look really appealing as well. It's so cool. And you talked a bit about your kind of where you live. What could you tell us a bit more about kind of the neighborhood that you live in, whereabouts you live in Florence?
Yeah, absolutely. So I live in, well, broadly the Oltre Arno area, which translates to the other side of the Arno.
Okay.
And it's Florence's, if you want to make a sort of cheesy instant Parisian comparison, it's Florence's left bank. So I'm on that side of the river, but still very much in... central Florence. So, I think there's this misconception sometimes of the visitors that like, oh, the other side of the river, it's like far out. And no, I mean, to a Florentine, they're like, oh, you're living in Pieno Centro di Firenze, meaning like the full on center of Florence. Although, I'm not below the Duomo or anything like that, but, that's not my view, but I'm in, sort of the subcategory of the Alto Arno that I'm in, because I would say you can broadly divide it into three sub neighborhoods. I'm in San Frediano, which is historically an artisan neighborhood, and filled with kind of craftspeople at work and lots of interesting little studios and boutiques and things.
And Mary, can you tell us sort of I know this is a hard question, but what is it that you love most about living where you live or living in Florence? What is it that's kept you there than rather say Rome, where obviously, you lived for a stint?
Well, I'll say I love Rome and I love the gritty charm of Rome and I love the big city feel being there. And sometimes Florence, admittedly, can feel a little small and a little like, ugh, you know, I need to kind of get out of town and go see something else, even though it's beautiful,
yeah.
Of course. But it can feel a little bit constricting at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's part of making a place your home, you know, is like, it's not going to be this perfect place that you see with through rose-colored glasses all the time. And I think that what's kept me, though, in Florence is that even though Rome has this fantastic big city feel, in Florence you do have some of the really the markers of a cosmopolitan and international city and things to do and see and a lot of stimulation.
Mm.
But it's easier to kind of meet up with people, to be spontaneous, mm-hmm. to, you know, you can call a friend and say, hey, I want to meet up in 20 or 30 minutes, and it's possible, you know, place, you know, like London or in even in Rome, you know, that's really not, it requires a lot more advanced planning. And so in Florence, there's a lot of room to kind of be spontaneous. And I also feel like there's a lot of room to feel like you're contributing to the cultural fabric of the city in some way,
mm-hmm.
The longer that you're here and you kind of carve out a space in the community. Because, I don't know, I think Rome, I can't remember where I read this. I think it might have been in one of our an essayist for the Florentine, Linda Falcone. I think she might have written this, that in Rome you get, or I'm paraphrasing, but in Rome it's the eternal city and it can kind of, you know, knock you down and humble you. And I think that's good. That's healthy. But in mm-hmm. Florence, you feel almost like aggrandized a little bit by feeling like, oh, there were all of these remarkable humanists and artists here who have made their mark on the city through the years. And I can be kind of part of it in a way, you know, even if you don't reach the level that they do.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit.
It's kind of a lineage of people coming into Florence, making it their home, and contributing to the kind of culture of the city and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always drawn people from all over, and that's something I think, you know, early on I was kind of drawn in by the obvious like trappings of the Dolce Vita sort of lifestyle, which I won't even get into speaking about how Dolce Vita is actually was never intended to be used as a phrase the way that it is today, but that's a digression.
Is that an essay in itself?
But you know, I was very early on drawn in by art and good food and everything, and of course that is part of what keeps me here, but I also think that through the years I've met a lot of people who are just like seeking something, you know. I would say Florence attracts seekers, and I like that about the people that I like finding that quality in the people that surround me.
So now we're going to talk about a few of the best things to do in Florence. So what are some of the sort of first things, Mary, on that kind of hit list when people are visiting Florence? What should they look out to do first?
Well, there are things that you can't skip in Florence, I feel. If you're only here for, I mean, obviously if you're only here for 24, 48 hours, it's difficult to pack things in. But I encourage, you know, leaving some time to kind of wander and meander. But the sort of essential obvious thing that I think everyone needs to see in Florence is Michelangelo's David in the Accademia.
Yes.
But I also think that if you're only here for, you know, a day trip, the Basilica of Santa Croce is a wonderful cultural site to stop at for, in general, but certainly it could be your kind of one and done cultural site if you're here for just 24 hours or so, because it's known as the Temple of Italian Glories. It's the burial site of Machiavelli and Michelangelo and Galileo.
Wow.
In addition to that, they're sort of competing with Ravenna for the claim of Dante's legacy. They've got an empty because Dante, of course, father of the Italian language, was Florentine, and they have an empty tomb at Santa Croce that's like awaiting his arrival 700 years later, because the city exiled him. And so he's buried in Ravenna, but there's still this like ongoing battle for like which city can claim his legacy, which is interesting. And there's also a lot of other interesting Italian writers, Ugo Foscolo, buried there. But besides it being a burial site, I mean, there's incredible frescoes by Giotto, pieces by Donatello. There's a there's adjacent to it, the Pazzi Chapel is a really fantastic space in Florence. So I think that that's kind of a good orientation to just to go to the Basilica of Santa Croce, and obviously, of course, there's the Uffizi Gallery filled with Renaissance masterpieces, namely, I mean, Botticelli, Botticelli's Bertha Venus and Primavera are kind of two of the big ticket pieces.
Yes.
But there's so many more. I won't get into naming all of them right now also because I'm not an art historian and there are many people who can talk about it more eloquently than I can. but those are kind of your big blockbuster spaces, let's say.
Yeah, yeah, some big name drops there. That was
Yeah. How about then sort of, so those are the big hitters. How about lesser known spots or secrets that you're willing to let people in on, to let listeners in on?
Absolutely. Well, I would say, okay, this is not quite a secret, but I would say a lesser known museum that is absolutely worth your while is the Bargello Museum on Via del Proconsolo. And it's actually interesting if you want to go there and compare Michelangelo's depiction of David that you see at the Accademia to Donatello's David, very different. It has a magnificent sculpture collection. But, you know, you don't come to Florence just to go to museums. And I feel like if you come to Florence just to go to museums and galleries, you're kind of missing out on a lot of the life and movement that you find, you know, in the streets. And so for me, one of my favorite places to go in Florence, and that I think that any visitor would get a kick out of seeing and experiencing and smelling is the Sant'Ambrogio Market. There's the Central Market or the Mercato Centrale, which is more in the San Lorenzo area of town. And it's a bit more, or I would say it's better known to the average visitor. Yeah. But the Sant'Ambrogio Market is a bit more local, and as much as I kind of hate to use this word, authentic, or, you know, a lot of Florentines still shop there, and there's vendors kind of hawking their produce, and inside lots of great little lunch spots, including one called Da Rocco that's absolutely worth going to. And so it's kind of a full, you see sort of the full Florentine community converging there, and, you know, shoppers with their dogs and everything, and they've got delicious things both for sale to kind of take away with you to cook at home, and places to sit down and eat or have a coffee inside. And I think that's one of my favorite spots.
Give the people watching, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a whole literary history in Florence that I think really gets overlooked, not just with Italian literature, but with sort of, the English in particular, sort of the grand tourists and whatnot.
Yes,
and so I think that's something that would be really fascinating to visit for anyone who's kind of bookish or inclined in that sort of way is Casa Guidi. It's only open on Mondays, but it's the former home of Elizabeth Barrett Browning and Robert Browning. They lived in Florence for something like 15 years and are said to have had pretty much the most productive period of their respective lives here, despite the fact that Elizabeth Barrett Browning was was bedridden for most of the time that she was here. Okay. But she was completely smitten with the city, and their Cocker Spaniel Flush is also buried in that space.
Oh,
and fuck. just around the corner. And actually, Virginia Woolf wrote a really wonderful little volume, like a half nonfiction, half imaginary or fictionalized account of Flush's life in Florence. Like some of it is just about the dog. And some of
it is.
I have
no idea about this.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It's really wonderful. And around the corner from Casa Guidi, there's actually an apartment in Piazza Pitti where Dostoevsky, who hated Florence, wrote The Idiot. And I think it's so funny because he, you know, came to Florence like escaping debts and, you know, trying to just escape like this miserable life, but found himself like more miserable in this city, living in this square also that's kind of like associated with, you know, grand wealth and the Medici and whatnot.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting.
That's really interesting.
Those are great tips. James and I are both quite bookish, so you're speaking our language.
Absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. I'm glad. No, I really wanted to include that because no one mentions Casa Guidi ever.
I love that. And the thing about Flush the dog, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
yeah, great. Yeah, yeah.
And the book actually too is like goes into all the like the sense of Florence and how the dog like, you know, how a dog would experience the city. And if you come to Florence, it's really that you'll notice the pups everywhere. And
yeah.
So Flush is part of like a big community.
Dog culture. That's so
big
cool.
Dog heritage. That's
good tips. Yeah, I love it.
That is really cool. And how about, obviously, Tuscany is one of the sort of most famed areas of Italy. I mean, kind of one of the most beautiful spots in the world, kind of places. Mm-hmm. What about like kind of in that area? Do you get out of the city much? Are you able to kind of explore Tuscany and where would you kind of recommend people to go?
I occasionally get out of the city, but I have to say that early in my time here, I spent a lot of time exploring just outside Florence in the hills and in this sort of nebulously defined Chianti area to do kind of wine tastings and things. But now I like to, when I get out of, when I go beyond Florence, I like to go beyond Tuscany a little bit. I've really been getting into the Liguria region of Italy recently. Mm. But I will say in Tuscany, one of my favorite spots that might be a little bit atypical for visitors is, you have your obvious contenders like Siena and whatnot, these other gorgeous sort of art cities.
Yeah.
But I would recommend checking out also Livorno, which is sort of a grittier port city with a really interesting history and vibe. Lots of delicious places to eat. They have a fish stew, a traditional dish there called cacciucco that's really nice. And I'm a big I kind of like let my mouth lead when I travel. Yeah, I like to go to places with like food and drink in mind.
I mean, especially in Italy as well, you can't not do that, right?
That's, yeah. So Livorno doesn't have that maybe surface level beauty that some of the other areas of Tuscany do, but I think it's got its own kind of grit and charm about it. Pienza is incredible. If you're looking for kind of something to just, or, you know, to be sort of swept off your feet. And it was sort of designed, or it, not sort of, it was designed to be the ideal Renaissance city.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. There's really so many, honestly.
Yeah.
But those are just a couple of favorites.
And just as we're talking about food, zoning back in on Florence. If you eat one thing, if you had to eat one thing in Florence for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard.
Yeah, that's really hard.
one thing.
All right, you can have two if you want. Yeah, I'm not going to hold you to it.
Okay, well, if I'm totally honest with you, then there's when I have people come visit in Florence, or when I if my parents come to see me, or when I have visitors from, typically from the States, but occasionally it's friends I've made in Florence over the years that then come back to the city. I'll take them to Alla Vecchia Bettola, this restaurant in my neighborhood that, and I always get sort of the same, it's sort of my splurge meal for when people come to town, or I wouldn't necessarily do it on my own, but I'll get like whatever kind of vegetable is in season. And then I'll get, depending on, you know, what time of year it is, of course. And then I'll get their house pasta, which is penne alla betola, which is basically like this cream and peperoncino, so chili flake, and tomato-y pasta. And then split with these, whoever's visiting better not be vegetarians, because I'll have bistecca alla fiorentina there. That's my favorite place to get Florentine steak. And so, you know, I don't want to say that every day for the rest of my life I would only eat those things, because that would be kind of a heavy diet. But but that's a special.
What a way to live, though.
Yeah, and every time I go there and I order that, like getting the primo, the first course of the pasta, and then the second course being the steak, the waiters are always like, they kind of do a double take, and they're like, it's going to be a lot of food. And I'm like, I've done it before.
I know what I'm doing.
I'm a pro. Yeah. I've got experience in this. I know. Yeah.
So while then we're talking about food, we're going to do a quick fire round, Mary. I'll start. James, you go next. So I'll start. So your favorite place in Florence to eat. Go.
Okay. Three places, one place. I'll say All'Antica Mescita in San Nicolo. Great traditional restaurant.
Lovely.
Alla Vecchia Bettola, I already said.
Yep.
Trattoria Sabatino. Those are three.
Okay. And are you largely eating pasta at those places, or?
Pasta or... as I said, Alla Vecchia Bettola, the steak is really nice. All of those places, I don't know, every now and then in Florence, or every few years, always there's like, or really not every few years, every few months it seems like there's some kind of chic new hotspot opening that often closes within, you know, a few months. And these old sort of old hat trattorie and osterie and kind of rough and tumble places, I think are more fun ultimately.
Cool. Lovely.
Awesome. So I think this is a bit of a contentious question in Florence, because obviously room with a view, etc. Your favorite view of the city?
Oh, favorite view. I would say, well, one view would be from the Rose Garden in the neighborhood of San Nicolo. Oh. So the Rose Garden is actually on the way up to Piazza di Michelangelo, which is the city's probably most famous overlook. But I think that if you stop at the Rose Garden, you can get just as satisfying a view with fewer crowds.
Perfect. That's cool. A great tip. Awesome. Love it. Yeah. And then your favorite day activity in Florence?
Favorite day activity. Oh, my. I also did make a list of things before this, but I'm just kind of blanking now. But one thing, I mean, I just like to embrace the sort of the Italian ritual of the passeggiata and go on strolls through the city, kind of exploring I always find that there's something new to discover in the Oltrarno neighborhood in particular, which is, I mentioned before, filled with kind of both traditional craft shops and kind of new generation spaces. I love to go for a wander and go to the Sant'Ambrogio market, for example, that's outside the Oltrarno, but just strolling around the city, stopping and having coffees at little places.
Perfect.
And
I mean, that sounds like a great day. That's you know, if you're in Florence, why not? And finally, your one thing you would like to drink.
Ooh. So Florence is the birthplace of the Negroni cocktail. And I think that that's, if you're going to have a cocktail, that's what you need to have in Florence. Although I like to drink a Negroni Sbagliato, which is made with, which literally translates as like a messed up or mistake Negroni, which, and it's made with Prosecco instead of gin.
Okay.
And, yeah. So, and so it's a little bit lighter and a little bit kind of
it's a bit fizzier fresher. As well. Yes.
Yeah. And a little bit more refreshing. And so a fun place to get that could be Procacci on Via Tornabuoni, which is known actually for serving truffle-based things, mm-hmm. but and not so known for its cocktails, but I think it's a nice place to get a drink. And because the space actually that was associated with the birth of the Negroni, the Cafe Giacosa has closed, unfortunately, sadly. Okay. But I love going to little wine bars, like, and two of my favorites, where they have like a really curated list of wines from different producers in Tuscany and beyond Tuscany, are Le Volpi e l'Uva, that is in the old Toronto neighborhood. I'm a little bit biased, I guess. They serve, in addition to wonderful wines, really, really delicious crostoni. So like big, you know, toasts with nice toppings that are always expertly paired with whatever wines they're serving. And then Il Santino. And it's in the Santo Spirito neighborhood, but that's still within the Oltrano. So, yeah.
So a nice drinking tour of the Oltrano then. On the card.
I can tell you a lot about where to eat and drink in Florence.
Excellent.
It's kind of my favorite hobby. When you're like daytime activity, I'm like, walking, but also eating.
Eating, drinking, walking.
Yeah, it's Italy though, so that makes total sense. I'm with you, Mary. I'm with you.
Exactly.
Whether you want to sample delicious Tuscan food and wine, gaze at the iconic Leaning Tower of Pisa, or browse eclectic markets in Florence, Decal Witness Florence and Tuscany make sure you experience all that this region has to offer. Our recently updated guide brings the region to life, transporting you there like no other travel guide does, with expert-led insights and advice and detailed breakdowns of all must-see sites. Find it via the link in our bio or wherever you buy your book.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So now we're going to discuss the kind of recent present and the future of Florence. So Mary, just quickly kind of what have the past sort of year and a half or so been like in Florence? Have visitors kind of started to return recently?
Visitors have absolutely been trickling in, or I would say they started trickling in maybe last summer. Mm-hmm. With autumn right now, obviously November is generally a less touristy time of year.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a huge increase in town of international students, for example.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of these programs, I mean, Florence is a huge, huge study destination.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, with U.S. programs alone, there's something like at least 40. And that doesn't even account for for different more international or global programs. So you're seeing a lot more a lot more students back in town. That's noticeable. Visitors, yeah, the energy, the kind of international energy is back in the city, for better or worse. Right. For I will say in March 2020, from March 2020 forward, or really February 2020, until kind of the end of 2020, it was very, very empty. Mm. Like when we would leave our homes during the actual lockdown, the height of the really intense lockdown that we went through from March to early, gosh, was it early June mm-hmm. of 2020, I think, mm-hmm. at this point, mm-hmm. That it was jarring to see how empty the streets were. And so it's kind of like one of these things too, where it's like careful what you wish for a little bit, because we were all ready to, I think that people were a bit fed up with mass tourism prior to COVID. And then suddenly when it was all stripped away, it was like, oh, we need, you know, Florence needs this momentum to kind of, maybe not at the mass tourist levels that it was at before, which I think is unsustainable, but it does need, visitors to keep a lot of its businesses going.
It's a bit of a debate that comes up time and time again on the pod, really, in terms of, you know, over tourism is a problem kind of around the world, but at the same time, you know, to keep those kind of local economies running, there's a level of people and a level of tourism, and kind of getting mm-hmm. it right in the future is maybe one of the lessons of the pandemic, I think.
Yeah, that's something that I hope to see in Florence moving forward, is not a rejection of the fact that this is always going to be a tourist city. I think we should embrace that, and to some extent, that this is a place that's beloved by many people around the world, and I think that for good reason. But looking at how we can embrace those people on a more sustainable level, and in a way that respects and prioritizes residents, because at the end of the day, that's what people are coming here for. The things that make Florence unique, you know, they're not coming to go to this generic, you know, street with all the chain high street stores that you can find anywhere else in the world. So, yeah, I'm hoping to see some change with that moving on from the pandemic.
And so with those people who are coming, and as you're saying, hopefully then shopping at those artisan makers, etc. Mm-hmm.
Local producers, exactly.
Yeah. Is there a particular time of year that is a great time for them to visit?
I actually think, well, if you can brave a bit of rain, I actually think that this time right now, November, is really nice, because I feel like October still has that very kind of romantic appeal of like all the colors and all the autumnal things and all the autumnal foods, and you have a lot of that still in November, but it just gets darker earlier, and it can feel a little bit gloomy. But that means that the city's a lot less crowded, and you're going to have if you come maybe on the later side of November, or do it sort of early into December. December 8th is when the holiday lights get lit.
That must be magical.
It's a beautiful time to be here, for sure.
Yeah, good tip. Good tip.
I'm guessing as well, it's much easier to get bookings at restaurants and things like that as well around this time of year versus...
Yeah, it definitely is. And again, I think that there's not really a bad time to visit. Maybe August, just because of all the closures. But... you know, there's not really a bad time to visit, but I tend to think that actually, you know, November is really nice. Or even, if you wanted to go, for example, to the Uffizi on January 7th, the day after La Befana, Epiphany, which is kind of like the end of the Christmas season officially, then you're going to have the Uffizi almost to yourself. Or that was like how it was in the past, kind of January, that second week of January is a really when the city kind of empties out for a bit. And I don't know, you might like to be here in spring when it's full of energy and full of a bit of chaos. I mean, I've come to appreciate and embrace each kind of season of the city.
Yeah.
Cool. That's some great insight there. And I think really interesting. I'd never thought of Florence as kind of a January destination, really. But yeah, that sounds amazing to kind of have it, not to yourself, but that little bit emptier and kind of and easier to kind of move around as well. And are there kind of any big events or seasonal kind of festivities coming up in 2022? Is there stuff that's been cancelled during the pandemic, which is making a comeback, etc.?
I'm trying to think. There's always the so Estate Fiorentina is interesting. It's sort of this big umbrella festival. It translates as Florentine summer. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of funny because Florentine summer in the festival's terms will extend from like May to October typically. It's sort of just an amalgamation of different cultural and artistic events. The Florence Dance Festival used to be part of it. I think it still is. And after having sort of quieter and a lot of heavy online editions, for the past 2 years, pretty much now, past two summers, I think that it'll probably be back in fuller force this year. And then there's also the Scoppio del Carro, or the explosion of the cart, which is an interesting and very quirky and very Florentine thing to see on Easter weekend here in town.
Of the cart, what's that?
Yeah, okay, well, it's a
I imagine there's a great backstory here. There must be a good backstory.
And I'm embarrassed that I don't know more of the specific that I can't recall all of the specific historical details and relevance of it, but around 10 a.m. ish, I believe, on Easter Sunday, a cart carried by several oxen comes into Piazza Duomo, basically a colombo, a dove, so it's a mechanical dove nowadays, but is shot out from the Duomo at the end of the Easter Mass.
Okay.
And then it comes onto the cart and lights this pyrotechnic, or sets off this pyrotechnic display.
I see.
And there's like a elaborate fireworks show right there in the piazza for probably 20-30 minutes.
What was it? The explosion of the cart?
Explosion of the cart.
Total sense. It does sound like an explosion of a cart.
I'm quite fascinated about the mechanical dove.
The mechanical dove.
And I'm always like, how do they pull that off? I don't really understand it.
Little remote controlled dove coming down. That's a brilliant tip. Well, thank you very much, Mary, for taking us through a kind of whistle stop tour of Florence. There's so many recommendations there. I think listeners, if you want to go back with your notepads, I think there's many, many specific places you need to write down for your next visit. But it's been brilliant kind of speaking to you about the city and finding out a bit more about it. You speak about it so well.
And my stomach is rumbling, seriously.
Yes.
I'm hungry
so much
and thirsty for those Negronis.
It's only 11:15.
Ravenous.
Very keen. But yes, thank you so much. It's been brilliant. And listeners, if you want to kind of track down some of Mary's work, you can do. Mary's blog is verymarygray.com. That's right, isn't it, Mary?
Yes, it's not exactly a blog. That's just sort of my portfolio website. But verymarygray.com, you'll find a collection of work for different outlets.
And listeners can follow you at verymarygray too, right?
Yes, exactly. That's
awesome.
Me.
Very happy I got that right there. But thank you so much, Mary. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Absolutely been my pleasure, and hope that you all can make it to Florence one day.
So, once again, a huge thank you to Mary.
Yes, thank you, Mary. That was lovely.
What a tour. What a journey around Florence we've had today.
Yeah, she brought it to life, didn't she?
Yep. And then Lucy didn't mention this on mic, but she told me immediately off mic that she is planning a trip to Florence in February. So listening.
I'm working on it. I'm hoping. I'm genuinely.
I was really suspicious that it wasn't like being added to your list. You didn't mention it, and it's already on there. It's clearly like you know.
Well, they don't want to hear it again. But this time, I'm like, no, genuinely, guys. This morning I was looking at flights.
So there we go. Watch the space to hear about you know, all the messy Negronis that Lucy drinks.
Yeah.
So listener, you can join us in our next episode, where we'll be in Amsterdam.
So looking forward to that.
Very, very different city.
It'll
be a fantastic one. Really interesting to kind of find out. I think there's a lot of like kind of Amsterdam that isn't talked about as well. There's quite famous or infamous like kind of aspects of Amsterdam, but
and we do remember have Like a Local Amsterdam coming out in January.
We do,
2022
we do
as well.
So yeah, I mean, I think it'll be great as a kind of primer to get to know the city before that. So you can join us for that in a fortnight, listener. But until then, it's bye from me.
And bye from me.
And see you very soon.
Where to Go was produced by the team at DKI Witness and the wonderful Julia Baker. It was presented by James Atkinson and Lucy Richards and mastered by Johnny Coddington at Bottle Rocket Recording. For more information about DKI Witness, follow us on social media at DKI Eyewitness or visit dk.com/eyewitness.
And don't forget to please like, rate, review and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Your support means so much to us.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.